Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Mike Fontham. I represent the Louisiana Public Service Commission, the appellant. I've asked for 2 minutes for rebuttal. I primarily plan to argue two issues. The first is that there was no basis for the FERC in the compliance order to depart from an agreement of the parties affirmed by the ALJ and never mentioned by the FERC in opinion number 480 with regard to the treatment of interruptible loads. And there is no possible way, in the absence of any discussion of that issue in either 480 or 480A, that the LPSC could have waived the issue, my client, the LPSC. Secondly, with regard to the Vidalia repricing.
Wait. Before you go beyond that, are you just going to tell us what issues you're going to go back to this?
Oh, yes, Your
okay,
Honor.
Fine.
Absolutely.
Okay.
The second point I will argue is that the FERC has made it clear there that MSS3 average pricing is not ELL MSS3 pricing. It said so in the compliance order and explained the difference. In 480, it adopted MSS3 average pricing. It did so repeatedly and explicitly. And the LPSC, by relying on that, cannot have waived an appeal of the FERC's decision. With regard to the first issue, the LPSC 1 decided that this court's precedents and primarily the FERC's precedents established that utilities do not build capacity
for... Are you going to talk about the waiver issue?
I am going to, Your Honor. Right. That's where I'm going to, right?
Okay.
But I want to set the stage.
Yeah.
That capacity should not be allocated to interruptible loads. In the underlying proceeding in 480, the LPSC proposed an adjustment to take interruptible loads out of the loads to which the fixed cost of capacity was allocated. The parties in that case responded by saying, that's on consideration in the interruptible load docket. That's been remanded from the court. That decision will control this issue. That issue should not be decided in this case, and we acquiesced in that. Every party, all the parties that addressed the issue on brief, briefed that the interruptible load docket should control the issue.
But when the commission proceeded in 480 to do just that, you didn't challenge it.
Well, Your Honor, they didn't proceed to do anything in 480 except
they included interruptible load, didn't they?
All they did was say
be governed by exhibit
ETR 26.
You know,
that's right.
Which includes interruptible load.
It does include interruptible load. But exhibit ETR 26 was mentioned one time in the entire opinion and never mentioned again in 480A. That one time in the entire opinion, it was mentioned as the FERC explained that it was going to adopt the repricing of Vidalia to MSS3. And when the FERC explained that, it referred to Exhibit 26 because Exhibit 26 was one of a series of exhibits that contained, this one was the only one that contained the Vidalia repricing adjustment. You had Exhibit 25, which contained...
It's in a section whose title is whether the Entergy system is currently in rough cost equalization.
I don't disagree with that,
Your
Honor.
About the whole system.
The title of the section is about 8 or 10 pages away. And if you get to the paragraph that this is in, it's in one of a series of paragraphs that all discuss Vidalia repricing. Now, Judge, my opponent, this issue was final when it got to the FERC. Nobody even appealed the decision, the agreement to have the decision in the other docket control. And my opponent has said in her brief that if the FERC were going to overrule a decision of the ALJ, the ALJ found twice that the decision in the other docket would control, it would have to give attentive consideration to that decision of the ALJ. It would have to explain why. The LPSC is sitting in this case. Number one, we've got a final decision. Everybody agreed. Number two, this reference to ETR 26 had to do with a completely different issue. It had to do with Vidalia repricing. And number three, when Entergy made the compliance filing and put the interruptible load in, they didn't even refer to ETR 26. They tried to portray the interruptible load decision as giving them a basis to do that, which they later recanted. But they never suggested for a second that they thought they could do that based on ETR 26. So how could we have waived it?
What about the commission? The commission says that, so your argument is that you just couldn't have known from.
We couldn't have known.
Okay, the commission says you should have made that argument before the commission here.
That we should have made the argument in the appeal of 480.
No. You should have made it before the commission in the compliance proceeding.
Well, that means I've got to anticipate an argument of waiver that hasn't been raised yet. It's going to be raised in the Court of Appeal where they say the LPSC is doing a collateral attack.
No. The argument is that in the compliance proceeding, Energy included interruptible load, right?
In the compliance proceeding,
that's
Energy.
That's on appeal here.
Yes, and okay. We protested.
And you're challenging that.
We are.
Yeah, and the commission says you should have argued there that you couldn't possibly have had notice from 480.
Well, I think we did argue that, Your Honor. We said this exhibit was filed before the parties' agreement. We said the parties did agree. We said that the ALJ did affirm the parties' agreement. And we said that, therefore, you just missed the boat, FERC. You have this reference to ETR 26 couldn't possibly have been intended to overrule the parties' agreement. Now, the exact words that you're suggesting we didn't say. Oh, by the way, if you bring this up as a waiver in the Court of Appeals later, here's our argument why it wasn't a waiver. We didn't do that. But we explained to the FERC that this decision was ridiculous. Everybody had agreed on this. And no one could have thought in 480 that we were supposed to take a rehearing of a matter that was not appealed, that was not discussed, that the FERC, you know, this is an argument that's based on the words interruptible load don't appear in the decision anywhere. So you're supposed to divine that this was intended to overrule this agreement and the ALJ's decision. That's not what the court's opinions say on waiver.
Well, you knew about when you challenged 480, right?
Yes, sir.
You knew about the exhibit, right?
Sure.
Okay. And you also knew that in the interruptible load proceedings for, 68?
468.
Yeah. That the commission had gone the other way, right?
The commission had issued the ruling that would control the issue.
Wasn't that enough to have alerted you to the fact that there was a serious problem here?
It didn't alert us at all, Judge, because we had a final decision that that decision would control.
You just told me you knew about Exhibit 26.
We knew about Exhibit 26, but there was no possible way we could have believed that an exhibit that was filed into the record well before the agreement was reached. And the FERC didn't refer to it at all with regard to interruptible load. It referred to it specifically and only in a discussion of Vidalia. And Vidalia repricing was intended to say, we're now picking this issue up, even though it wasn't appealed, even though it was agreed upon, even though nobody objected and never has objected, we're picking it up, sub silentio, we're reversing. That could not, you can't hold people to that kind of prescience. That we absolutely believed that when this compliance filing was made, that the Energy would comply with the agreement. And Energy, all Energy did was it came in and it said the interruptible load order, which everybody had agreed would control, supports doing it the way we want to do it. They didn't say ETR 26. And they didn't even bring up ETR 26 till after we came in and protested and said the interruptible load order is all fours. A statement that interruptible loads do not go in.
You've brought a 206 proceeding elsewhere?
The FERC said was, we aren't even going to consider any of the merits. Bring a 206 proceeding. Later on, we brought a 206 proceeding. They said, we already decided this. Now, they did say they have this distinction between peaking capacity and all capacity that they rely on in their brief. Well, first of all, The decision in the interruptible load order applies to all capacity. It says Energy builds no capacity for interruptible load. Second of all, opinion 480 says that MSS1 applies, and if you look at page 72 of the joint appendix, you can find this. It says MSS1, which was the interruptible load order, applies to peaking, load following, and base load capacity. not just peaking capacity, and it rejects the argument that MSS-1 applied to peaking capacity. It was on a separate issue, a different issue. But they made it clear that that wasn't just a service schedule for peaking capacity. But the more important point is that the interruptible load decision applies to all capacity. And the adjustment here is for the fixed cost, not total cost, the fixed cost portion, which is what is known as capacity cost, which is what all the FERC precedents apply to. Now, with regard to the second point, maybe I should touch on that. In opinion number 480, the FERC, again, going back to the same sentence, said, follow exhibit ETR 26, which reprices Vidalia at the average MSS3 rate. And in 480 and 480A, repeatedly, they said that they were repricing Vidalia at the average MSS3 rate. In doing so, they adopted the position of Entergy and of the FERC staff, both of which were appealing the Vidalia issue. The ALJ had put it in at full price. And they advocated repricing Vidalia at the average annual MSS3 rate. MSS3 rate is the pool transactions, the so-called exchange. And as the FERC made clear in the compliance order, the average annual rate is all 8,760 hours, all purchases by all companies. The ELL rate is a portion of that. It is for some hours that ELL happens to be taking from the pool, and it's not the average. It's not an annual, and it's not the average, because it is just one component of the average. In the compliance filing, Entergy comes along, and it says, well, in this ETR 26, we use the ELL rate, not the average rate, so we're repricing Vidalia at the ELL rate, which differs substantially every year from the average rate, and which cannot possibly serve the FERC's purpose of pricing replacement energy for Vidalia, because it's computed after the fact in a year when ELL did take power from Vidalia, so it doesn't reflect what it would have to purchase at all. It's impossible. It can't possibly serve the FERC's purpose. No one denies this. This hasn't been refuted. We filed exhibits on it, affidavits on it. No one has refuted it. No one refutes it on brief. The only thing they say is, well, the LPSC should have known. Even though it wasn't in the record, it's in a work paper that was supplied, but it's not in the record, that what really was in ETR 26 isn't what the FERC said, isn't what Entergy said, isn't what the FERC staff said. And the only thing that seems to have any persuasive power at all for that, since you ought to be able to rely on what an agency says, clearly says, particularly when the agency itself says what we said isn't what we're adopting in this compliance order. It's a different thing. Is this question that they refer to that the LPSC counsel supposedly asked a witness during the hearing, which suggests we might have known it was the ELL rate. And that's why I got that transcript that I asked the clerk to provide to you. And I just found this. This is an examination of a different witness.
This transcript wasn't in your brief, though, was it?
No, sir.
So I don't think you can rely on that oral argument.
I cannot bring it up on oral argument?
Right. It's completely unfair to FERC. They haven't seen it.
It's in the transcript.
Doesn't make any difference. We have a very clear rule here. You can't raise arguments or cite evidence that you haven't cited in your brief. So.
Well, okay. Then I'm prohibited from using the transcript. But I can assure you that
we're
hidden.
You're prohibited from using things you didn't put in the record on appeal. That's the issue.
Well, it's in the record. It's not in the appendix, and I didn't find it for the appendix. It's a 4,000.
You didn't put it in your briefs either, right?
It wasn't in my brief, yes, sir. So I'm prohibited.
By your own choice.
Pardon?
By your own choice.
No, it's because I missed it. So it's by my own omission, my own failure to find it in time.
Let me ask you about it. I just don't want you to run out of time before I ask you this question. Your effective date argument?
The effective date argument, yes, Your Honor.
I just want to make sure I understand what you're arguing.
LPSC.
Let me finish my sentence.
Yes, sir.
I just want to know, is what you're challenging is you want a January payment date, not a June one, right?
No, Your Honor, what we're saying
That's
is.
That's not
We're saying that the LPSC 3 overruled and reversed the delay up to 07, up to January 07.
Is that issue on remand now?
Yes, sir.
So isn't the commission right that it's unripe for us to decide at this point?
Well, the compliance order already said you can delay it further from January to June.
That's
so the compliance order...
That's what I just asked you. Are you challenging the issue that's... Are you raising the question that's now on remand, or are you arguing about the effect, about the January versus June payment?
We're arguing about the January versus June under the principle that this court has ruled there should be no delay at all, that it goes back to June of 05.
Well, won't that issue be resolved by the commission?
Well, hopefully, someday.
Okay, so why should we decide it now?
Well, Your Honor, I believe...
Don't you agree that if they could decide it, it's not ripe?
Your Honor, it's hard to believe that it's not ripe when they came in on LPSC 3.
You just said that it's before the commission.
Your Honor, the issue of delay is before the commission.
Okay, the remanded... Right, and the commission could decide that on an earlier effective date, correct?
So I think they've been told to.
Okay, so then what's to argue here?
The argument here is...
Why should we decide the question?
Because, Your Honor, the court...
When
only,
that issue is resolved by the commission, then it can be challenged.
Well, it may get resolved by the commission, but the reason we raised it is because the court's remand, the court's reversal, dealt with the delay till January of 07. It had not occurred by the time of 480 or 480A that they delayed it further till June. So we believe that it's a now ripe issue. They've decided the case. It's just like their request in LPSC 3. They said, we're considering the issue, don't decide it. This court didn't listen to that. This court said, hey, wait a minute, you've already delayed. They've already been injured by it. It's definitely ripe. And what they promised was they were going to decide it in this case. This case, they said in LPSC 3 2 years ago, we're going to decide it in the compliance proceeding. Well, now here we are 2 years later. It's been remanded. They've been told to decide it. And someday they'll decide it. It's not ripe. Well, you know, if everything possible that you could raise is either too early or too late, then they don't have to have a reason for anything.
Okay. We'll give you a minute in response. Ms. Bocella?
Good morning, Your Honors. Beth Pacella for FERC. I think I'll start with the Vidalia repricing, if that's all right with the court. Everybody agrees that Opinion 480 directed that future production costs would be follow the methodology in ETR 26, and that it says that Vidalia repricing would be at the MSS 3 rate. But ETR 26 includes the repricing of Vidalia Energy based on the annual service schedule MSS3 rate paid by Entergy Louisiana, and no one disputes that either. And the evidence shows that there was reasonable notice here, and not even just reasonable notice, but actual notice, as we pointed, as actually the interveners pointed out in their brief at transcript at JA 543, Louisiana Public Service Commission's own counsel asked the question, is the adjustment derived by using the average annual MSS3 rate paid by Entergy Louisiana multiplied by the volumes of the Entergy Louisiana purchases? And that is what the Entergy Louisiana MSS3 rate is. So everybody knew, and at best, they could argue that the situation was ambiguous in the 480 proceeding. But that then requires, as this court has pointed out, that if there's any, that there's a risk that 480 would mean what the commission now says it means, you have to ask for reconsideration or a hearing at the commission. And they did not do so. Additionally, using Entergy Louisiana's MSS3 rate does serve the commission's purpose because, as the commission explained, what it wanted to do was, at JA 15, paragraph 53, what it wanted to do was deem Entergy Louisiana to have paid for the purchase of power from all other Entergy resources had it not purchased energy from Vidalia. And that's what happens here. It's still MSS3 purchases. It's just a different pool of purchases than the petitioner is now hoping the commission had meant, which it had not. I don't know if there are any...
What about their... are you going to go on to the other issues?
Sure.
Oh, go ahead. Why don't you talk about the interruptible load and the waiver issue? They said they just wouldn't have known that from 480. It's just one exhibit, and who could
have called it? It was just one exhibit, but it was a critical exhibit. Uh-huh. The main purpose of a 480 was to find out whether the production costs were in rough equalization, and it was based on ETR 26 that the commission determined, based on that very exhibit, which included interruptible load, that the operating companies were no longer in rough production cost equalization. So it was a critical exhibit in this proceeding. It wasn't just an exhibit. And if Louisiana Commission thought that think about the chronology here. What happened was the initial decision in the 480 proceeding occurred in February 2004. And then in March 2004 and April 2005, the 468 interruptible load orders were issued. It wasn't until after that opinion 480 issued in June 2005. And even after that, of course, that opinion 480A issued in December 19th, 2005. So if the Louisiana Commission really thought that 468 had determined interruptible load could not be included in calculating whether the operating companies were still in rough production cost equalization, and that should not happen going forward, they needed to bring that to the commission's attention. They knew that the ETR 26 included interruptible load, and that the commission had based its 480 determination on, in part, interruptible load, and that the commission had ordered that exhibit and that methodology be used going forward. So it was incumbent upon them at that point, even if they didn't do it before 480, they could have come in immediately after 468 issued and sent something to the commission saying, hey, you've just issued this. You now need to conform your determination of 480 on that. Even if they didn't do that, once the commission ordered in 480 that ETR 26 methodology be used, it was very simple for them to come in and say, whoa, that includes interruptible load, commission, and you need to fix that. You can't include interruptible load, not only going forward, but you shouldn't even be including interruptible load in determining whether whether they're in rough cost production equalization now. So they really, really knew what was going on here. This was a critical exhibit, and they just sat, on their hands and didn't raise it to the commission until the compliance proceeding. And that is just too late.
On the effective date issue or the refund question?
Yes, Your Honor.
Your argument there is that it's not ripe.
Right. This is not like in Louisiana 3. This is quite different. In Louisiana 3, the commission said, here's our ruling. We'll relook at this in another case. In the orders I'm defending here, the commission's compliance orders, the commission did make a holding in the first order, but then on rehearing, the commission plainly said, we are going to defer our ruling on these timing matters until we act on remand in the case that we based our timing decision on. And so it was a very logical exercise of the commission's discretion to set proceedings for when they make sense.
So you don't see petition here as challenging this June versus January payment date?
No, not at all. I would have put in my brief a defense to that. I just think it's the general timing issue. You can't delay it at all. It has to be effective immediately.
Their title of their argument. See, I was confused about it too. That's why I asked counsel the question. At page 55 of their brief, the title is FERC's approval of an additional 5 months delay conflicts with our prior opinion. So I thought they were talking about January. They wanted payment in January instead of June.
I think
that's not what they're talking about.
That's not what I got from the substance of what they said in their brief. Again, because I had more words, I would have answered and given a substantive answer. I think the point is the commission's not made any final determination in this case regarding when this will be effective. If the commission decides consistent as petitioner, Louisiana Commission has said plainly in its reply brief that issue will be moot.
Right. Is there any way in which how the commission resolves the effective date question would affect this January-June issue?
If it does, the petitioner would have an opportunity to readdress that in that proceeding.
You wouldn't take the position that
It's all open.
It wasn't challenged here, and therefore it's waived then?
No, because I think there's no final determination here, okay. So they couldn't challenge it here.
Right. Okay.
There are no further questions? Thank you very much.
Can we put that in our order, by the way, or our opinion? Okay. You're speaking for the commission on that. Okay.
I am, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Does he have any time left? All right, why don't you take a minute? Would you like to take a minute in response? Yeah.
Uh-huh. My only point would be this. The FERC decision in choosing this ETR 26 was a decision that simply specified the exhibit that does the Vidalia repricing. Energy didn't think that said to put interruptible load into the tariff. Energy relied on the interruptible load order and misportrayed it. We didn't think that said to put interruptible load into the tariff. We thought the issue had already been decided, and if the FERC was overruling the ALJ on that and the parties' agreement, the FERC would have said something. We thought that's all done. So when compliance filing comes in, and there were many proposals in that compliance filing. Energy clearly didn't think it was bound by ETR 26 in the compliance filing. It made numerous proposals for how to allocate the production costs. The FERC never raised this idea that ETR 26 controls everything until the compliance order came out. And to contend that a party should know that their deal got overruled when the FERC doesn't mention it, That would carry this notice issue to absurd levels.
Thank you. Call the next.